Hi guys, hope everyone's well and welcome back to the Improvement Podcast. So in this episode, I'm going to go over a Q&A. Quite like doing these, they're just a bit refreshing. So hope you enjoy. Any questions for a future Q&A, just give me a shout. And if there's any topics you'd like me to discuss, or if there's any specific guests you'd like on the podcast, please just let me know. And in terms of the first question in today's episode, so it's going to be, how do you establish a calorie deficit? So a calorie deficit, for those that aren't aware, is simply just basically the calories you need to basically lose weight. And there's many ways you can kind of work out a calorie deficit. There's not one that's right and there's not one that's wrong. Or you could say there's ones that are wrong. But the way I typically approach it will differ depending on the client. If I know a client or an individual who's asking for help has previous data when it comes to tracking, then you can kind of use that previous data to establish how much calories you need to lose weight. What I mean by that is, if let's say someone is maintaining their weight on, let's say, 3,000 calories, and you therefore know their maintenance. So if you know your maintenance, then a deficit is just simply going to be less than your maintenance. So what you'd then look to do, if you already know your calorie maintenance, is take food away until you basically drop weight. If you are going into trying to calculate how much calories you need to lose weight without any previous history tracking before, or without any previous data to go off, then the best thing to do is just kind of start. And what I mean by that is just start tracking, just see what your body weight does based on what your current intake does. What I mean by that is, let's say you track for a week, you keep your activity pretty static, you assess what your body weight does. Let's say your body weight goes up, then you then know, right, that's you in a surplus. So you need less calories to then create a deficit. So what you'll basically do is then toggle your calories accordingly to then lose at a rate you want to lose at, assessing what your body weight does on average. The reason why I've mentioned average a few times is because your body weight will fluctuate. So you shouldn't base your decisions on what your body weight does on a daily basis, because a lot of things will impact your body weight. Things like how much water you're drinking, how much food you're eating, how much fibre you're consuming, how much or how close to bed you eat, or how far away from bed, how far away from bed you stop drinking water, inflammation from training, stress, the list goes on. So basically you want to consider what's happening on average. Because if your body weight, let's say, consistently spikes up on a certain day, but it's trending down on a week, then you're in a calorie deficit. So that's how you can basically work it out. But the best thing to do, just like training, is not worry about being perfect. It's just start, and then you'll work it out eventually. You can also use calorie deficit calculators online. They're not always the most accurate, but again, it gives you a rough figure to go off, because you can always adjust accordingly. And just basically take away maybe 200 calories or so to get like your desired rate of loss, and then just rinse and repeat that until you're happy with kind of your fat loss progress. And obviously, when considering making changes, consider, right, have you actually nailed your current goals first? Meaning, before thinking, oh, I need to drop my calories, have you been consistent on your current calorie intake? Have you took everything into consideration? Because a lot of people will be like, oh, I'm not losing weight, I'm not making progress. I'm like, yeah, but 5 days out of the seven of the week, you've not stayed on track. You've not been on track the Saturday and the Sunday. Whereas that's a decent portion of the week. That's nearly a quarter of the week. So you shouldn't kind of make changes unless you've nailed your current goals first. So that's what I'll often say and do with my clients. Like, if they check in, they've not managed to adhere to something, the last thing I'm going to do is make it harder to adhere to, because you've not nailed the current goals, so there's no point kind of making changes accordingly. So yeah, to quickly recap, if you know your maintenance calories, just take some calories away. If you don't, simply guess and then take calories away from that. And you can use calculators online to give you like a rough ballpark of how much calories you should be consuming. And the next question I have is, why use a yoga mat on a leg press? So this is something I've recently done, which is probably why someone's asked a question about, of course. And in terms of what the yoga mat can do, is it can do a few different things. So first of all, when we use a yoga mat, it basically allows you more range, because the leg press won't bottom out as quickly, because it's placing you closer to the foot platform, which will mean you can go lower down before it hits the bumpers or the safeties or whatever mechanism stops the machine accordingly. So what this basically means is you'll get more bend at the knee, and as a result, you'll be able to take your quad for a larger range of motion, which can potentially be advantageous for muscle growth, considering the stretch is shown to be quite beneficial for muscle growth, which quite a lot of literature kind of states, and as well as that, just from anecdotal experience. And then when we use like a larger range of motion, what that will result in is not needing as much weight to get the job done, which can mean potentially less stress through our joints, which can mean less central nervous system of fatigue accumulated because we're not having to lift as much weight, and just getting overall more productive work done. So a better stimulus and also less fatigue from the movement while getting that greater stimulus. And there's also another use for the yoga mat, which will also allow you to get good depth. So sometimes you can just use a yoga mat to wedge you basically closer to the foot platform, and as a result be able to go deeper. But what you can also do is you can also use a yoga mat to basically change the position or the angle of your hip. So basically you can use it and you can put on your very lower back to then put you starting in more hip extension. So what I mean by hip extension is basically you're not as bent at the hips. The reason why this can be beneficial is some people, and on some leg presses, you can run out of range of motion at the hips before you run out of range of motion at the knee. What I mean by that is you get to the bottom, you feel like your hips are stopping you going any lower, you feel like your lower back is starting to round, all those things stopping you from getting a good amount of range of motion. So putting the yoga mat on your lower back will make you start in more hip flexion, so you're not lengthening the glutes as much and you're not starting with your glutes as lengthened as much, which will allow you to again get more bend at the knee and make it a bit more of a quad dominant leg press if that's your goal. Of course, if it's not your goal, if your goal is to target the glutes, it's not bad getting like a good stretch in your glutes and starting in more hip extension, or in other words, being more bent at the hips, but that's a potential purpose of a yoga mat. And it can also just sometimes be a bit more comfortable position to kind of press from, because again, it can keep your lower back safe and stop it from rounding, from running out of range of motion at that area. So that's why like I use a yoga mat during the leg press, and I'd potentially recommend it if you use the leg press where you struggle to get good range on without, because obviously not all machines are built perfectly for every individual, especially if, let's say, you've got smaller legs and or you've got really good ankle mobility, then you might not be able to capitalise on the leg press just due to how it's built, whereas if you can use the yoga mat as a tool, you can get more range and as a result get more out of that lift. So the next question I have been asked is an upper, lower or full body split, what is best? Because this individual has heard that like a full body split is quite a good option when it comes to muscle growth, which I definitely agree with. So it's quite contrary towards kind of popular belief back in the day, because a lot of people back in the day would have done like a bro split, meaning like a single body part split, so training one muscle group per session, which I'm not really a fan of for 90% of individuals. It makes sense for maybe people high up in their bodybuilding career, because for someone who's 300 pounds lean, then for them to grow their chest and put an extra kilo of muscle, or not even a kilo, half a kilo, a quarter of a kilo of muscle on that body part, they might need a lot of work to get that job done. And as well as that, they might find that, see, if they do like a full body split, imagine someone who's 300 pounds lean, or let's say extremely strong, put it that way, trying to do like a squat, a deadlift, a leg, let's say a chest press, a overhead press, a row variation, all in one session. They're going to be lifting an absolute ton of weight on all movements, which is going to be extremely fatiguing, which isn't bad. Well, fatigue can obviously have its negatives, but we shouldn't shy away from it. But what I'm basically saying is you'll be absolutely battered throughout that session, whereas a beginner who is, let's say they are squatting 40 kilos, benching 30 kilos, they are deadlifting, again, let's say 50, the amount of fatigue they're going to accumulate from those lifts is going to be minor. So they can definitely recover from that full body split. So the benefit of a full body split or upper lower split in comparison to like a single body part split is it allows you to hit everything more frequently. So the more frequently you train a body part, granted it's got enough time to recover in between, the more opportunities you are giving that muscle group to grow, the more times you're signaling muscle growth to take place. What I mean by that is if someone trains their arms once a week versus someone trains their arms three times a week, Who do you think is going to have bigger arms at the end of the year? Granted, they're doing the same amount of sets. I think it's going to be the person training their arms 3 times a week because they're given their muscles 3 times the opportunities to grow. So it's basically like, well, yeah, it's basically given that signal to grow, recover again, then grow, recover again, and then grow and recover again. Because let's say if you train arms once a week, let's say they recover in 2 days, then the 5 days after that, you're just waiting on, they're fresh, they're ready to get hit again, and they're just waiting on you training them. Whereas you don't kind of need that rest potentially, and you could potentially train them a bit more frequently. So that's the benefit of training frequency. It gives you more opportunities to stimulate and grow each body part. And something I say to my personal training clients, because a lot of them when starting out, I think a full body split's a great idea, is who's going to have more muscle at the end of the year? Let's say you or your identical twin, you train your chest 3 times a week, your identical twin only trains their chest 1 time a week. At the end of the year, who's going to have more tissue on their chest? Probably going to be the person who's trained it 3 times a week. So I'm a fan of like a full body split or upper lower split for that reason. In terms of what is best, it depends on your needs, it depends on what you can recover from, depends on your time, depends on enjoyment as well. If you can recover from a full body split, that might be a better idea, just because again, it allows you to hit everything more frequently. Whereas with an upper lower split, once you start progressing and getting really strong, that can be a good option. Also, the good thing about an upper lower split is it gives you a bit more ability to hit the smaller body parts a bit more. What I mean by that is if you're doing an upper lower split, you've not got time to hit your rear delts, you've not got time to do a ton of arm work, you've not got time to maybe train your calves. So if someone's very kind of torso dominant, meaning they've got a lot of like meat or muscle on their chest, their back, their quads, then them doing an upper lower split might be a better option because it allows them to give more attention to those smaller muscle groups. Whereas if you're doing a full body split, then it's kind of hard to make sure you get all that work in realistically unless you've got a lot of time to devote to training. And the reason why I say enjoyment as well is the people that make the most progress are people who enjoy the process. I don't bodybuild because I want to, well, I do want to be lean on stage, but I bodybuild because I love to train, and that's why I bodybuild. And if I didn't love training, I probably wouldn't be bodybuilding. So enjoyment's something massive, and that's something like I'll try and reinforce and develop into my clients, like enjoyment of the process, focusing on looking at those wee mini progressions, the wee mini wins, because muscle growth takes time, making progress takes time. So if you don't enjoy the day in day out progress, you'll really struggle to adhere in the long term. So yeah, if you ask anyone who competes or bodybuilds, they're probably not doing it for money, because there's not a lot of money in it, especially naturally, unless you're kind of very high up in the sport. Is for the love of the process. So it's about kind of finding what you enjoy is a big part of it as well. So yeah, full body splits absolutely great, especially if you're just starting out, because you can recover from it. It allows you to hit things more frequently and get more out of it, especially if you're not training that often throughout a week. You can definitely recover from it. So if someone's, let's say, only training 2 to 3 times a week, adopt for like a full body split. However, if someone's training maybe a bit more often, they prefer an upper lower split, that can be a good option. But what matters most is, again, not having the perfect split. It's just sticking to something consistently and getting strong, pretty much. Like, success leaves clues to people who have a lot of muscle or people who are strong across hypertrophic rep ranges with good form. So that should be kind of the priority in the forefront. Applying progressive overload, or in other words, making things harder over time while making sure your form stays appropriate. And I've also had a question saying, should you use knee sleeves and a belt for leg training? So it depends. Like most questions, and not to give you an awkward answer, like, do you have the need for them? If someone's, again, just in the gym, it's not like they need to instantly buy knee sleeves and a belt. So first of all, what do knee sleeves do? So knee sleeves can give the knee joint some warmth, and it can kind of make you feel maybe psychologically safer. And I've not looked into research directly, but if you've got a warm joint, you've got plenty of blood in the area, it's probably going to be a safer joint. So it can potentially make you safer going into certain big lifts where you're putting a lot of stress for the knee joint. So that could be a potential benefit of using knee sleeves. As if I'd recommend them, I personally use them. The knee sleeves I use, however, they're not super, super tight, which you don't want. So if we think about it, if you're using knee sleeves that are extremely tight and it actually makes the bottom of a squat easier or bottom of a leg press easier because they're that tight that it makes it harder for you to bend your knee. And what that's actually doing is it's putting less weight on your quad, it's putting less stress through your, or it's putting less torque through your knee. In other words, less tension for your knee joint and therefore your quad in that stretch position. And as a result, it means you're not loading your leg as much in the stretch position. Is this good or bad? Potentially bad when it comes to muscle growth because that's where we build muscle best. So maybe if you can get away without, I definitely wouldn't use really kind of tight and restrictive knee sleeves. And as well as that, when it comes to like using knee sleeves as well, it means you'll then need to use more weight in the top position where again muscle growth might not happen as effectively. You'll still accumulate fatigue from that and you'll get the stress going through your other joints. So basically it means your quad might have to work less. So if you are using knee sleeves, which you can, I wouldn't use ones that are super tight or restrictive for that reason because it can potentially take away from how much tension you're actually putting through that target muscle. And as for a belt, so what a belt helps you do is brace. So bracing is basically when you kind of tense the front and side of your core, you kind of create pressure in your midsection in order for you to perform better and produce more force. As for if you should use a belt to brace, again, do you need one? It can be a good teaching tool to teach people how to brace, but you don't necessarily need it. Some people might even find they brace better without. For example, when deadlifting, I don't like using a belt because I don't think I can brace as effectively. But for squatting movements, and when I'm doing a deadlift, I'm trying to train my back. And the research might not point towards this, but personally, so I don't like the idea of thinking, right, I need to brace through a belt throughout. I want to make sure kind of my back's actually doing the work. And that could be bro science, but that's just kind of my thought process there. And as for using a belt, you could consider it during squatting patterns because when we think about what our goal is when we're doing a squatting pattern, it isn't to take our back to failure, it's to take our legs to failure. So if, let's say, our bracing or maintaining tightness in our core is a limiting factor during the leg training, that means we potentially might be leaving gains on the table when it comes to training our quads. So in that case, I would maybe advise using a belt. Again, it could be a good teaching tool to teach someone how to brace. What I'd say though is I wouldn't rely on a belt and use it for every single movement because then you're just going to struggle to brace without, and that can lead to potential back issues, in my opinion. So yeah, belt can be a good tool to use. Again, you don't need it, but if you feel like you could do with the extra kind of brace and stability once your strength gets to a certain level, then it's something you could consider. But I'd definitely try and like, once you've maybe used it as a teaching tool or just before you even get a belt, I try and learn to brace without so you're not just simply relying on it and using it as a crutch and you can kind of nail that good form on the movement without, if that makes sense. So the next question is, and the final question for the podcast, because I'm going to leave this around the 20-minute mark, is do you need to squat to grow big legs? So you don't need to do anything to grow any muscle group. What I mean by that is if someone's, let's say, doing a leg press and they take the leg press from 2 plates to 4 plates to 6 plates to 8 plates. Regardless, if they're not doing a squat variation, their legs are going to be bigger. So, no, you definitely don't need to squat to grow big legs. However, does this mean it's not beneficial? Definitely not. Squats can definitely have their place, and it's an exercise I'd potentially recommend doing in some fashion. That doesn't need to be a barbell back squat. It could be like a hack squat machine, it could be a Smith machine squat. The benefit of a squat in comparison to a leg press or maybe another movement is with a squat, you potentially can get more range of motion at the knee, whereas some leg presses don't allow full bend at the knee. And as well as that, you'll obviously, if you're doing like a free weight squat, you'll tag on other muscle groups like your erectors or the muscles in your back. You'll kind of also work other muscles in your legs to maybe to a certain different degree or in a different position than doing like a leg press or another movement. So you don't need to do any movement to grow big legs, but it's still valuable to perform. So if you can do a squat variation pain-free and you get on with it, then I wouldn't say, I'd say why not. But if, let's say, you've got back issues, then you could maybe do the belt squat or you could just stick to not even squatting at all if you really can't, unless you've got like a machine that allows you to do so. So yeah, there's no absolutes when it comes to training. There's no exercises you need to do. every exercise will have its pros and its cons, but there's no one you kind of need to do to build muscle effectively. And there's no best exercise, because like what determines the best exercise? Like a lot of things will impact the effectiveness of an exercise, like enjoyment for one of them, if it causes you kind of knee issues. Because if, let's say, this person who asked a question, let's say you do need to squat to grow big legs, but they absolutely hate squatting and it hurts their knees and their lower back, then doesn't really matter what my thoughts are, because it's not like you can realistically do it unless it's a form related issue. So yeah, you don't need to do any exercise, you can build muscle without. But again, that doesn't mean it doesn't have its pros and cons. But what I'd say is, if like a lot of people with squats, it takes a while learning them. They're not a movement you can get within a day, within a week. So what I'd say is, don't sell your progress short, don't limit your progress and limit your exercise selection due to not wanting to take that time learning the basics. What I mean by that is, yes, it might take time performing the movement, not getting a lot out of it due to just trying to nail the skill, but once you learn the skill of doing a squat effectively, it will transfer over to a lot of other lifts, and it means you've got that tool in your toolbox if you're ever training somewhere where you don't have access to a leg press or a squat machine. Whereas if you don't learn the squat completely, then when you don't have access to the best training environment, certain machines, you're kind of screwed in terms of exercise selection and your ability to get a lot out of your quads during whatever kind of session you're doing, if that makes sense. So thank you very much for watching or listening. Again, any support in the podcast is greatly appreciated. So just comment, like, subscribe, all that stuff. Leave a rating and review if you're on Spotify or Apple. And any topics you'd like covered or any guests you'd like to see on the podcast, and feel free to suggest them and I'll happily consider them. Hope everyone has a great Christmas when it comes. Or in fact, this will be out after Christmas. So hope everyone has had a great Christmas and has an absolutely amazing new year and a good start to 2025.